WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is the big motion picture this week. You like that? It is the big motion picture as we make our annual Oscar picks. No news, no thing that happened, no what's hot, just Oscars all night long. Now, before you turn off your radio and say they threw out everything I like about the show, understand that we're going to have a lot of fun with this tonight.
I know, because we could be talking a whole lot of Trump.
And we could be talking about Trump, we could be talking about Apple Computer, we could be talking about a lot of stuff. But we're going to help you win your Oscar pool tonight. And every year I joke about this. You know, every year I joke about, oh, these are the absolute lock Oscar picks. You can't lose. Last year, you know, I put my money where my mouth was and won the Oscar pool at a party that I was at. I think you won last year too, didn't you?
Yep. You and I had both tied, but because you won Best Picture,
yeah,
you took it. Same thing with a year ago, or 2 years ago, we had both tied once again, but because I had Best Picture, I won. So we are really good at this.
We are. So the lovely and talented Lisa Nichols is with me in the studio, as always. The number remains 617-627-3800 if you want to call us up and berate us for our Oscar picks. And joining us, as she does every year, Molly.
Hi. Even though I'm bad at this, compared to Tarek and Lisa, I'm so bad at this.
Molly, nay Joseph, now Gary is with us as well.
But so, one thing I was saying to Derek on the way over here is this is the 10th time that Derek and I have done paired up or done it. And we've done it with various people over the years, but this is the 10th time that we've done this. And at the beginning, every year almost, I slaughtered Derek, and I don't know what happened over the last couple of years. I've just, every year, yeah, like, he's killed me. Yeah. So, like, this year, for the first time ever, I saw all Best Picture nominees, so I feel like I have a little more of knowledge, you know, a little bit more knowledge.
You always are better with the acting.
He's better at the technicals, yeah, being the film, you know, the film guy in college and knowing more about that and the acting, because I have a source that who's really into the Oscars also, and I didn't actually go to him this year for the first time in years.
I got a source too, and the reason that I've been kicking butt in this thing the last few years, and we'll get to the twist in this in a minute.
I need a source. I don't understand.
Yeah, one of my best friends from college is like really knowledgeable with this stuff.
I've been going on big data. I've been using big data in my Oscar picks and sort of analyzing, like, what's doing what and who's picking what and what's going where. So I'm the analytical data guy in all of this thing, whereas Lisa goes primarily on instinct, and Molly uses a combination of the two. Now, because Lisa and I, like, for the past 3 years, we're tied.
We are.
Like, I won one, you won one. And
then we tied.
And then we completely tied 1 year.
Because we both had the same picture.
And that's why you guys started. You guys have to think of a way. Like, if there's a full-on tie, you have to think of something else.
And
like,
we've only been doing this for 3 years.
Because we only like to prove that we're better than each other.
Right.
With everything.
I know, because I'm not competitive
any of our listeners
at all.
No.
I'm not a competitive person.
Not at all.
I take losing graciously, as anyone who has listened to this show for any amount of time will tell you. I'm so gracious as a loser. I don't scream and yell or pout or storm out of the studio
or do
any of those things.
No, we just go drink. It's
fine. But because we've been tying each other for the last 3 years, this year, in the hope of one of us actually outright winning, we've come up with a new team system.
Yeah, a little change.
So the way that this works is Lisa and I, like, we're both really good at this. Like,
yes, you are.
Every bit of respect. You were fantastic at this, and my methods, and I do bring my own insights into it.
I used to be good.
Yeah, Molly used to be good. So this year, both Lisa and I have a second person on our team, and it is our team scores that will determine the winner in 2016. So Lisa has been burdened with my wife.
Because the two of us on the same team, that would
be
Derek and I on the same team would be kind of a mess.
And by virtue of that alone, I'm sorry. It was, you know, maybe next year you'll do better.
We're in agreement on a lot of stuff.
And I've got Lisa's roommate, Kim, who unfortunately can't be with us tonight. Mm-hmm. We're heartbroken that she can't be here.
Yeah, not feeling under the weather.
But we do have her picks.
I do. Mm-hmm.
So
power of technology.
Yes. So we're going to be going through everything. We're going to be explaining what these categories are, what these movies are, why we think these films are going to win. We're also going to hear all of the songs that have been nominated for Best Picture or Best Original Song this year. We can't do the scores because they go on for hours and really... no one cares, right?
It's true. Yeah.
Other than, you
even
know.
John Williams, who I love.
Yeah, for like 2 minutes, people care about the score for the bit yes. they hear on the Oscars, and then it's like,
I'm good.
So, I think it was a terrible year for movies.
I have to admit, you know, having seen all eight of the Best Picture, one of them I did not see in the theater, Mad Max, I saw at home. I was... pleasantly surprised, actually, because you've only seen about what, half, Derek?
Yeah.
For the nomination, like two of the Best Picture nominees, I wasn't a fan of. I didn't hate them, like Mad Max, not a fan. Revenant, overblown. But I was pleasantly surprised, actually, like Room, Brooklyn.
Yeah, there were no movies that completely stood out to me.
No,
that were absolutely amazing and had some sort of impact. You know, it was very subpar. Same thing with the acting. Mm. If you look at any of the categories, in previous years, especially with Best Actor, Best Actress, there was a lock for the reason because they played the character so well, not because it was their time to get recognized or, you know, and we'll go through them once we start going through leading actor and leading actress.
But it's like there are, you can have up to 10 Best Picture nominees. This year there are only 8.
Right.
And I think you can look at this list and, like, just off the top of your head, pull a couple movies off of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Mad Max.
So that's not one that I'd pull off of it.
Now, there's a big question. Would we put in, say...
Straight Outta Compton.
Or Creed?
No, for specific reasons.
Yeah, biopics are really difficult. And,
yeah,
and
they are.
It's a lot of information all at once.
The one film that I thought... the film that I thought got more recognition than it deserved was The Martian.
Agreed.
Because
it was an awful movie.
Ridley's, I agree with you. I didn't like it.
It was an awful movie.
I did not like it.
The director of The Martian directed your favorite movie, so you're a fan of his work.
I am one of the biggest Ridley Scott fans on this planet. But I've seen Ridley Scott make this movie before.
I was going to say, haven't we seen this movie just with a different
Alien.
Title?
Yeah.
I liked it better when it was called Prometheus.
Yeah. An alien. You know?
And or Alien, yeah.
It's like it's Castaway in
pretty much,
yeah.
Except
the sky.
In space.
Yeah.
And it's like, I wasn't impressed with Matt Damon in it. I wasn't impressed with anything about it. And mm-hmm. I was just sort of like, yeah, that's there. The other movie that I would easily pull off of this list is Bridge of Spies, because I didn't...
You haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, but I haven't been compelled to see it either.
I saw it on an airplane. Actually, that's another movie I didn't see in the theater. I saw on the airplane going to Florida, and Tom Hanks is my favorite actor, easily. Like, everything he does is always
we're going to go by the Academy.
And then Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg is normally, like, a guaranteed. And it was good, and it's a true story, biopic, but it wasn't compared to some of the other stuff.
But you also had the studio that was pushing for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And this is how many of the movies get nominated or do not get nominated.
It's a film that pushes all the right buttons for the old white guys that decide the Oscars.
Yes.
It's a historic picture.
That's the movie for the studio, like the older Academy voters. Whereas like
Russians, we got to put
whereas
a movie in about the
like and Brooklyn, you could probably say is in that same area. Whereas Mad Max is probably the one for the younger.
Ex Machina should have been on it.
Ex Machina probably should have been on there.
I've heard that. I didn't see it, though.
And the other film that I think really should have been on there that in my eyes was the huge snub.
Sicario?
Other than Idris Elba for Best Actor, which was a
supporting
huge snub.
Supporting actor.
But the film that I thought really got overlooked was The Walk, which was one of my favorite movies
of
last year.
Oh my gosh, that movie was phenomenal. You and I, and I just watched it recently at home on Blu-ray, and that movie and us having gone to, you know, the actual place, the 9/11 Memorial Museum recently, seeing it at home again was just... It was amazing.
But that film was IMAX spectacle.
Yes.
And nobody saw it when it came out, which is why it didn't get any recognition. And it's a shame.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt was great, too, I thought.
Because
it was really good.
It was a film. Everybody was great. Ben Kingsley.
Yes.
Was fantastic in that movie.
Yeah.
Great in everything.
Yeah. This was another.
He's won an Oscar winner for Gandhi.
And he's been nominated a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. This was another brilliant Ben Kingsley performance. Yeah.
He's always good. But just like Tom Hanks, he's always good.
Nobody saw the movie. I came on the air and begged people and said, go see it in IMAX. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of this movie. This is a giant IMAX spectacle. And if you miss seeing it in 3D IMAX, mm-hmm. you're going to miss the whole point of the thing. And apparently Hollywood's attitude was like, oh, we missed it. So.
Well, some people thought the problem, two things. If you're motion sick, not motion sick. If you're afraid of heights, then I remember telling my parents, you have to see this movie because I thought they would really enjoy it. And my mom's like, I wouldn't want to see it because she won't even go to the top of the Empire State Building. She hates heights so much. So, you know, it's so realistic, the imagery in that movie when he's on the wire, that people were walking out of the theater or getting nauseous.
I was breaking out into a cold sweat.
And then
I was
some other
it.
People also thought it was too soon after 9/11. And they thought, you know, and it's like it's been, you know, almost 15 years. So I think it had been 14 years by that point, you know.
If you go to the museum, the 9/11 memorial,
which we strongly encourage anybody to do,
which we were at in January, mm-hmm. in the gift shop, they have coffee mugs.
We bought one of them.
Which we did, that show the walk.
Philippe Petit walking with his balance in between.
Very cool. Yeah.
Because that, and as they point out in this movie, the movie really is a love letter to the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. And the background of it is everybody in New York hates these buildings, which was true at the time.
Yes.
Partly because it had destroyed the old Fulton Street Fish Market and a lot of other beloved neighborhoods.
And it was also an eyesore.
Now, when is this movie taking place?
Like, at the walk was in 77.
76 or 77.
76, mm-hmm. 77.
Yeah.
But the one good thing it did many good things, but the World Trade Center helped create Battery Park City.
Yes.
Which a lot of people don't know. You know, like where you go when you get the boat down to Statue of Liberty in Ellis Island, it helped create that, all of the... But yeah, my dad lived in New York at the time buildings were being built, and he was like, everybody hated them because they were so ugly.
Everyone hated them, but after the walk, everybody loved them.
Because I mean, they became part of the city.
It made the buildings personal to New Yorkers, mm-hmm. because something that had never been done before anywhere else in the world was happening in their backyard, and everybody could look up and see it. So that was...
And he was one of the proponents, Philippe Petit, of getting two Twin Towers built again.
Yeah.
When they were trying to figure out what they were going to do.
He said,
if there's going to be two towers built again, I will do the walk again.
Yeah.
No kidding.
How old is he now? He's probably, what, like 60-something?
Yeah.
But he was like, I'll do it again. And he probably would have been given permission to do it because he did it completely illegally, this walk.
Yeah.
Like, he got arrested afterwards. He was being watched on either side.
Well, he
by
was teasing the cops going back and forth during that.
And we're talking about no net, nothing.
No safety wire, nothing.
All he had was, like, if you guys have ever seen Nick Walenda, you know, walking across the Grand Canyon or in Chicago, how he has that huge balancer. Yeah. That's all he had. That was it.
It's a great movie. highly, I will say this.
Does not sound like my type of activity.
I would never do that either, but still.
It is a movie that is ferociously entertaining and one that I encourage everybody to see. And if you've got a 3D TV, all the better. If you've got a big TV, all the better. Because part of the fun is the vertigo. So, moving past that, we always start with one of the lesser categories, or one of the major categories, just as they do at the Oscars themselves. And I think Best Supporting Actress is the one that they usually start with. Am I correct about that?
I think so.
So, we do this one, and then we go into the minors. So, Best Supporting Actress, our nominees are Christian Bale. No, that's not it. Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, which
you
was
loved her.
Spectacular performance. Rooney Mara in Carol.
I haven't seen it. I want it. I've heard mixed reviews about Carol.
Rachel McAdams in Spotlight, which surprised me.
Yeah.
She's good.
Yeah, but nothing.
Not compared to Mark Ruffalo.
Wow. I didn't walk out of that movie going, wow, did you see Rachel McAdams in Spotlight?
Which is what we said about Ruffalo when we left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alicia Vikander in The Danish Girl and Kate Winslet in Steve Jobs.
Who was amazing.
She was amazing.
She was good.
It took me half the movie to be like, wait a minute.
That's Kate Winslet. I know, right?
Yeah, she was really good. So we will start with Team Lisa.
All right, I am going with the Danish girl, Alicia Vikander.
I agree.
Now, this is one of those categories. I think it's a little more confusing than the male counterpart, which we'll go into. But it feels like this is going for her. Kate Winslet could be the upset on it, but I feel like all the momentum is going towards Vikander.
This movie, when I saw it with my mom, we walked out of it. We both enjoyed it quite a bit. But she was like...
Hands down, this is better than Eddie Redmayne.
Oh, easily. My mother walked out saying, this is her movie. Like, yeah, Eddie Redmayne is the one who... The story is about him, but it's really more about... her. Like, she played his wife in the movie, and she was phenomenal. She's Swedish, I think.
Yes, she is. What was Kim's pick for this one?
Same.
So, all four of us are in agreement.
Okay.
If you choose anyone other than Alicia Vikander, you are probably betting against the winner. And the thing about this is, this isn't just about her performance in The Danish Girl. This is also about her performance in Ex Machina.
Yes, that's right.
She had two movies that were breakthroughs for her last year that were very, very highly praised.
And she was unreal in that movie.
If you want a dark horse, if you're looking to break from the pack, or if you want to win, you're going with Alicia. But if you want a dark horse that might pull the stunning upset, Kate Winslet is beloved by the older members of the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is seen as the classic well-behaved Hollywood leading woman.
Mm-hmm.
That said, this is a category that has tended to recognize and reward young talent.
Yes.
And Alicia Vikander definitely fits into that category.
She's younger than we
are. You see that a lot in supporting actress. It's the new young thing that's coming into Hollywood.
This is a category in past years that has given the award to the youngest ever Academy Award
Tatum
winner,
O'Neil,
and that was Tatum O'Neil
this.
When she was 10.
Anna Paquin won this when she was 11.
11, and then Mary Badham got nominated, who played Scout to Kill a Mockingbird.
Lupita Nyong'o.
She was 9.
Won it a couple of years ago for 12 Years a Slave.
Or was she like 20?
She was like 22, maybe 23, young. Something like that.
Yeah, so young actress, couple of hot roles this past year. It's not a 100% mortal lock, but it's a 90%
it's
mortal
pretty
life.
Close.
Yeah. So, we like Alicia Vikander, best supporting actress. We'll move on to the lesser categories, and we will start with the short films. Lisa, I don't know if you've seen them.
I have not.
Okay. Molly,
we did.
Molly and I have. And
we've seen some of the documentary shorts, too.
They are available on demand right now if you want to watch them. They went up yesterday. So, there's an on-demand program of the live-action shorts, the animated shorts. So for live-action short film, we have Ave Maria, which is an Israeli... I forget if it was an Israeli co-production.
I believe so.
But it's basically a film about an Israeli family out in no man's land.
Husband and wife and a mother-in-law.
That drive into the statue of the Virgin Mary outside of this tiny little Catholic convent on the day of the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. Hilarity ensues. And this really is all about poking fun at religious tradition while at the same time acknowledging that everybody has certain things in common and that everybody's ultimately trying to help everyone else. Great, great, great little film. Day One is an American film about a translator on her first day on the job. I think it's in... Iraq, Afghanistan.
It's horrible. I don't remember that.
I think it's in Iraq. And she's a female translator who goes out on a raid and comes across a woman who is about to give birth. Again, this is a film...
based on a true story.
This is a film about cultural tradition. And this is a film about some of the societal problems that we're running into dealing with what's happening in the Middle East. It is a harrowing film.
Yes.
It's a very good film, but it's a harrowing film. Everything Will Be Okay is another harrowing film. Swedish, I think. Swedish or Swiss, somewhere from that part of the world.
I don't remember. There are two different parts of the world.
But. About a father abducting his daughter.
Oh, that was, I think that was Swiss.
I think it is. Yeah, it might be Swiss.
But I'm pretty sure it was Swiss.
The acting in the film is spectacular.
The girl was phenomenal.
There's an 8 or 9 year old girl in this movie who just walks away with the whole thing. Yeah. Everybody in the film is spectacular. Shock comes out of the former Yugoslav republics, and it is a film about a man remembering his experiences growing up with his best friend during the conflict between Serbia and Croatia. And it is probably the bleakest, darkest, most unpleasant of the films. And then the last one is Stutterer, which is a nice English language, English film about an online couple meeting for the first time, and the man has a very bad stuttering problem, which is why he's been dating online. And the question of whether or not he will have the courage to actually meet the woman. It is cute, it is charming, it is very funny.
Sounds like my dating life.
Yes. So, as I'm going first on this round, Ave Maria, I think, is going to take this one.
Nope. I think,
all right,
Lisa.
I'm agreeing with Derek, nope. And because I read all the descriptions, and I know, and as you pointed it out, it is a very humorous story.
Yes.
And with the shorts, if you look back in history, they tend to go for the humorous.
They go for humorous and uplifting. English language is a big plus.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot
the
of this film...
dark ones generally do not win.
Yeah.
Then I'm in trouble.
What did you...
Because I went with Shock. But originally, up until maybe 2 days ago, I was like, I think Ave Maria, I think. But no, I'm going with the darker one this time.
Kim's pick?
Kim went with Stutterer.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so we're all in different places here.
Well, you and Lisa agree. But
yeah,
Yeah.
One of those, this is the thing, Shock and Ave Maria are pretty much in a dead heat in this category. Either one of those films could win. Both of them are powerful films. Ultimately, I agree with Lisa. I think the happiness element and the light touch of Ave Maria gives it an edge
and
over
Shock.
And we're
talking about, you know, poking fun at the church and Hollywood and...
Right.
Yeah. Shock.
You know, there's not many Catholics over there in Hollywood.
Shock is certainly
practicing.
The more consequential movie. And for anybody who's thinking about seeing the shorts this year, highly encouraged. This is the best crop of short films.
Oh, I agree.
We've been going,
I think this was our third year, going to see the live action short and the animated short. And this was the best year by far, I thought.
Best animated short film. And we've seen all of these as well.
Mm-hmm.
Bear Story is a computer animated film that is done in a clockwork mechanical style, in which a bear tells the story of his life, what are those things called? Through an organ grinder.
Organ grinder, yes.
That illustrates all of the different things that have happened to him, loving and losing his family. Mm-hmm. It's really a story about getting animals out of the circus.
Animal cruelty.
It's not about, but specifically aimed
in
at the circus.
Well, right.
So there is a message to this film.
Mm-hmm.
Beautifully done. Mm. Some of the most impressive animation of this
favorite.
Year. Prologue, which is a beautiful colored pencil, hand-drawn film that is just filled with sex and violence, or nudity and violence. It's basically about some ancient Romans killing each other on a battlefield.
And this was the one, if I remember correctly, that it was the last one, I believe, right? That they showed?
Yeah.
And there was a warning when we saw it in the theater, like, you know, the final movie is going to be really graphic. Please, you know, get all children, like, out of the theater before we show it. And when you see that, it's
generally
like, oh, geez,
associate
animated with, like,
with,
but this was
sex.
Whoa, this was even for Derek and I, it was very intense.
Off the top of my head, I forget who made it, but
I don't remember
it's an animator that has worked on a lot of well-known things.
Yeah.
So this is a well-known animator that did this. Sanjay's Super Team, which ran before Inside Out, is the Pixar short film entry this year about an Indian father and son. The son wants to watch TV. The father wants to pray. And the son starts to see that the Indian gods have a lot in common with the superheroes that he loves. And it's a very touching little father-son story. We Can't Live Without Cosmos is probably the most accessible Russian animation I have ever seen. And it is a story about the Russian space program. It is free to view online. Just look it up. Just look it up. We Can't Live Without Cosmos. It is a beautiful, funny little film. And a very sweet little film about the dangers and the aspirations involved in being a part of the space program. And then World of Tomorrow, Don Hertzfeldt, who has been nominated in the past and I believe has won in the past. This film is available to watch on Netflix right now if you don't want to do the whole thing with the on-demand, all of the short animated films. It's Don Hertzfeldt. And if you know what that means, you know that it's funny, you know that it's goofy, you know that it's oddly paced, and you know that you are going to see things and hear things that you will never forget for the rest of your life. So, those are our films. Lisa, actually, Molly, you were the first to go.
Bear was my favorite for the short animated, but it's not going to win. I'm going with World of Tomorrow, where the characters have no necks.
Typical. No typical.
It's a
Don
head
Hertzfeldt.
With like a you know with a body, no yeah. neck.
I'm going with Sanjay's Super Team just on the sense of, I believe, Inside Out and the Pixar have huge momentum this year right now. And for it to be shown before, I think it's a lock.
Kim's pick in this category?
We Can't Live Without Cosmos.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Because we're all different.
I am with Lisa. I am going with Sanjay's Super Team. But I will say this. And even more so than live-action short film, either Sanjay's Super Team or World of Tomorrow is a legitimate pick. Either one of those films could win. World of Tomorrow is the critical darling. And everybody
That's
loves...
That's why I went with it.
Everybody loves Don Hertzfeldt. Molly may be the one person who's right on this
one. For once.
But Sanjay's Super Team ticks all the right boxes for me. It's a good little father-son story, and it's a nice, you know, uplifting piece of animation. It's beautifully rendered. I think that's the winner. But if you're looking for the dark horse,
I'm wondering when we're going to choose a different choice.
We'll get there.
I know you guys have.
Told you.
Best documentary short subject. Body Team 12. This is a film about the Liberian Red Cross workers trying to deal with the Ebola epidemic. Chow Beyond the Lines is a film about a young Vietnamese boy, a teenager, who was deformed by his mother's exposure
Agent
to
Orange.
Agent Orange, mm-hmm. and who has a dream of becoming a painter and a fashion designer. Claude Lanzmann's Spectres of the Shoah is a biography of Claude Lanzmann, who made one of the best-known documentaries about the Holocaust, the 9.5-hour film, Shoah. A Girl in the River, The Price of Forgiveness, which is about a Pakistani girl who is shot in the face and left for dead in a river by her brother and uncle because she tried to elope with her boyfriend. So it's a film about honor killings. And Last Day of Freedom, which began life as part of an art installation. It is a fully animated film. In which a man tells the story of his brother who was put to death in California because of a murder and raises a lot of questions about the death penalty and the application of the death penalty. Lisa, you get to go first on this one.
I'm going with Body Team 12. Generally, in whether it be short subject or long subject, documentaries tend to favor very large news stories or things. I mean, if we look at Citizen 4 last year, which talked about the NSA, this is talking about Ebola and how we were completely, our entire news cycle covered this. So when you have a short, you know, subject documentary, I think it gives it the upper hand.
No. I mean, Derek and I actually watched the one that I picked today. And I remember thinking, why isn't this like an animated movie? And Derek said, because it's a documentary. And it actually really was. Not only was it about the death penalty, I picked Last Day of Freedom. Not only is it about the death penalty, but this gentleman's brother was also... had been in a horrible car accident when he was young, so that made him mentally impaired, and he was a Vietnam War vet.
Had post-traumatic stress disorder.
He had also been injured by shrapnel in Vietnam, and he had PTSD. I mean, there was all of this stuff. It was really pulling, so definitely Last Day of Freedom for me.
Kim's pick?
Body Team 12.
So we've got three on Body Team 12, because I am supporting that one as well. Anything that's got a charitable angle, and this is about the Red Cross... tends to do well in this category. And I agree with Lisa. The timeliness of this is very, very good and makes it very relevant. That said, I think Molly is sitting on the likely dark horse in this category.
This is the third time that I'm on the dark horse, yeah. That I'm like close to you guys. So like,
I could be it, but maybe not.
Normally the rule of thumb is the movie about the Holocaust wins.
Right, exactly.
However, or... Or the movie about the filmmaker wins. So we have a movie about a filmmaker who made a movie about the Holocaust, and we're sitting here and saying, don't vote for them.
It's like a, double entendre.
And it's because they're the thing that works in favor of Last Day of Freedom, which, by the way, you can see on Netflix.
That's how we saw it.
You can also see Chow Beyond the Lines on Netflix.
That was really inspiring, too. I'd encourage everybody to see that.
If deformed people upset you, watch Chow. No, but some people are freaked out by it.
Yeah, that's true.
So if that upsets you, don't watch it, because there are a lot of kids who are deformed by Agent Orange. Mm-hmm. And that's, on one level, what this film is about. But Chow's story is phenomenal. And the director actually waited 8 years to finish the film because she wanted a happy ending. And I think had a belief that Chow would get there, which he does. I was moved by Last Day of Freedom. It's a very powerful film. The fact that it's animated makes it more accessible, but at the same time starts to blur that line of what is documentary.
Well, that's why I was confused.
And you said that's also available on Netflix?
Yes.
That's on Netflix.
That's why I was confused at the beginning before we started getting really into it.
There was an animated film nominated for Best Feature Documentary last year, which was the film about the Israelis, Israeli soldiers. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely worth seeing, and I think it's incredibly strong because of the brother who narrates the story. Is incredibly strong and incredibly likable through the whole thing. Absolutely recommended. I won't feel bad if that wins. But I think Body Team 12 has got this one. And that brings us to one more before we take our first break, which is Best Documentary Feature. Typically in this category, you can just go by whatever made the most money at the box office. That's sort of the deciding factor. And in this category this year, we've got Amy, which is about Amy Winehouse. That's available on Netflix right now if you want to see that. Cartel.
Also on Amazon.
Amy is on Amazon. If you have Amazon Prime, you can get it for free. Mm-hmm. Cartel Land, which is an up-close investigation of the carnage and life during Mexico's drug war.
That's on Netflix.
That's available on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. The Look of Silence, which is a history of the Indonesian genocide of the 1960s. If you think that sounds familiar, this is the same director, Joshua Oppenheimer, who directed The Art of Killing.
You and I saw that. That was...
Which won the Oscar a couple of years back.
That was
pretty serious.
That was the one
intense.
Where he had the people who participated in the genocide reenact it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was bizarre, but got him an Oscar. So he's back with another film about that. What Happened, Miss Simone, which is available on Netflix... is a documentary about Nina Simone, who is a fascinating character. And then we have Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom, which is available on Netflix. This is very similar to The Square. What The Square did for the Arab Spring, Winter on Fire basically does for the Ukrainian independence movement. You are there as things are going down, and a lot of what you see in the film is extremely unpleasant, but you also... really love the people who are fighting for freedom in this. My choice, I'm going with the box office winner, and that's Amy.
All of us.
Yeah.
Well, Cross the three of us. Does Kim think that too?
She did.
Yeah.
Her vote was Amy. I'm really hoping that it does win because I love Amy Winehouse. Her music is unbelievable. And even watching it, it made her more real to me. It was just unbelievable. And so I hope it wins.
I watched part of it today with Derek. I'm not normally a big Amy Winehouse fan. Her voice is very soulful.
Oh, I love her.
I mean, that's great, but for me, I don't know if it's because I'm a musical theater snob or, you know, where I'm really used to being able to
she was never that traditional voice.
But I'm used to be able to understand, you know, the diction and all that. And she was hard for me to understand. And in the documentary, when she was
singing, they captioned a lot of her songs.
Which is, for me,
well, I mean, also
good,
you had to understand that she was half the time blackout drunk.
She was such
during
a tragic,
half of her performances.
She was such a tragic character, but I think, because it's fresh, you know, like she's somebody that everybody still remembers. And, you know, she was also a member, I was saying to Derek, a member of the 27 Club, you know, like the musicians that, like...
died at 27.
Right.
She really became popular... I feel like when I was just getting into college, so like I understood her popularity, but then reliving that in the film, it you understood how important she was to the music industry.
Here's the thing: I never liked Amy Winehouse, and
I thought you liked Rehab. No.
I particularly don't like that song. I never liked Amy Winehouse. I didn't see anything particularly special about that documentary, but I came away from it with admiration for Amy Winehouse and much more respect than I'd previously had for Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of easy to write her off as just this big mess at the time that she was popular. This really goes behind the scenes on the whole thing, and you watch her disintegrate.
Mm-hmm.
You watch it all come apart, and you understand that the reason she came apart was because she was never somebody who could handle that level of fame.
Oh, absolutely. And if you have any... you know, connection to addiction and understanding that, you even have more of a connection to it.
And she had a really tough family life, too.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of against her.
Yeah. There definitely was. So we all like Amy in that category. Now we're going to get to the first two nominees for Best Song. We play all of them every year. And this year, they are the worst.
Terrible.
They are the worst.
Terrible.
It is crap on top of crap.
What is wrong with the Academy, the people who nominate this stuff this year? My goodness.
Let's start out with this one, which is The Weeknd from 50 Shades of Grey singing Earned It.
Yeah.
That movie, my goodness.
Starts out nice enough.
He just won a couple of Grammys.
He's a poor man's Michael Jackson.
No, he's very talented.
He's a poor man's Michael Jackson.
He just won a couple Grammys, Derek.
He is a poor man's Michael Jackson.
You make it look like it's magic. Cause I see nobody but you. I'm never confused. Hey, I'm so used to being used. So I love when you call unexpected. Cause I hate when the moment's expected. Yeah. 'Cause girl, you're perfect. You're always worth it.
You know what I really don't like about this song? You know what I really hate about this song? This is...
Honestly, I don't mind the song. It plays on all your top 40
it's
channels.
It's not bad, but it's kind of boring.
But,
It's not his thing with this song.
Other than being boring, maybe this fits
it's underwhelming.
In. Maybe this fits in with the film.
But on its own, the song isn't bad. But when you connect it to the film, it has... And don't get me even started on the whole 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon, because I think it's absolutely ridiculous and it's stupid.
I'll say that.
I refuse to see the movie.
Ugh, it was dumb.
That being said, that song doesn't connect me to the movie or the whole...
Not at all.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not playing the whole thing because it's terrible. But as you go deeper into the song, you realize this is basically a song about a guy that beats his girlfriend saying, it's okay, baby. I'll change because you're perfect. That's what this song is about. This is a song for abusers to play to their battered girlfriends to get them to come back.
Pretty much.
That's horrifying.
You're just kidding.
Yeah, that's a... I mean, and everybody knows what 50 Shades of Grey is about. You know, the dominating.
Right, and in the context of that movie...
I won't go into depth.
In the context of that movie, it makes sense.
Yes.
But that is a movie for a serial abuser to play to his girlfriend every time he gives her a black eye.
Pretty much.
I hate it.
Should be the theme for the NFL.
Yeah.
Oh goodness.
Yeah. The Ray Rice story.
Or baseball yeah. Because David Ortiz is defending people now.
So if you didn't like that, you're probably not going to like this.
Oh. You know what? It's sad that after such an amazing song from Skyfall and Adele, that this is the next one. It's sad.
I've been here before, but always hit the floor. I've spent a lifetime running, and I always get away. But with you, I'm feeling something that makes me want to stay.
If this actually went somewhere from here, this would be a good song. But it doesn't. This is it. This is pretty much what you get out of this song.
Again, like I said, Skyfall was so amazing that Adele did. And it's the only Bond song to win an Oscar as of now.
I understand what they were trying to do with this and the build-up, but it's not... The build-up fell flat. And there was no excitement to it. That's it.
This is the chorus. This is when it's supposed to go through the roof, and it just never happens. It just stays at
that
level.
It's like you're going up the mountain, and you stop halfway, and
it just kind of plods along until the end, and you're like, what the heck is this? It is, in my opinion, the very worst of the James Bond songs.
Who is the singer again?
Sam Smith.
Sam Smith.
Who's huge right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, he's super, super popular.
Sam Smith is great. I have no problem with Sam Smith.
If this was a year ago, that maybe could have won.
That's a bad song.
But I think his popularity is dying slightly.
That's a bad song. So that we don't have to suffer through a bad song through the break, I'm actually going to play a good song that recently won a Best Original Song Oscar. We'll be back right after this here on WMFO Medford.
Moment so overdue, I owe. Okay, gang. So, chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So, who's going to do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. I'm Lisa Nichols with my co-host Derek Gary and very special guest in studio, Molly Gary. We are here for our annual Oscar show.
Wait, who let my wife in the studio?
You did.
And we have a write-in from one of my best friends, Kim Tibbetts. So if you have, you know, just a bet going on with some of your friends, if you're going to a party for the Oscars and you have a pool, we will give you the right choices because Derek and I are really, really good. Molly's not far behind, but Derek and I are really good.
She's kind of far behind.
But if you have listened in previous years, we all do it individually as competition. This year, a little bit different. Molly and I are teamed up, and Derek and Kim are teamed up. We are going to have a cumulative score of our teams, and then that will determine who wins.
And then you know the rules. Next week, whoever the winner is, at the very beginning of the show, you have to announce it.
If all four of us agree on something, and you don't pick it in your Oscar pool, can't help you.
If all four of you don't pick...
So far, we've all given you... And well...
Minors.
We've gone
through all the films that no one saw.
Best supporting actress.
We started
out with one big one. That was a lock from all of us.
Yeah.
And that was Alicia Vikander.
Yep.
For Danish Girl. Unbelievable. So write that in right now in permanent markers.
Yes.
You're not going to have to erase it. What was the other one that we were, three
Amy.
Of us?
Amy.
Oh, Amy.
All
so everybody locked.
All four of us agree on Amy for best documentary feature.
It.
Put those two down. So, Lisa, what do we got? Keep going through the minors on this.
All right. So, should we start to get into production?
Yes. Anything but song, because that's the one that we do at the end.
All right. Let's start with sound editing and sound mixing.
All right.
Now, a lot of people may not know the difference between sound editing and sound mixing. Now, essentially, editing is the making of the music or making of the sounds. Mixing is using the sounds, but then compiling them to produce
the audio picture that we see, or hear, I should say. The best way to remember best sound editing is to remember that up until about 1963, it was best sound effects. So best sound editing, BSE, best sound effects. That's, we're making lightsaber noises, we're making gunshots, we're making explosions, we're making train sounds. Everything that they couldn't record when they were recording the movie is sound edited.
And for the majority of the time, they are the same movie.
Yes.
Very, very rarely do they split.
Right.
There's a little thing where musicals have a tendency to win best sound mixing.
Like Les Mis.
Yes.
A few years ago.
Yep. Les Mis is one, and I think Chicago took that award a few years back.
Because that music is not there when they are filming the movie most of the time.
Whiplash, last year, won Best Sound Mixing.
Did you see that, Lisa? I know Derek has. That
Whiplash?
Movie is phenomenal.
Whiplash is
and
unbelievable.
So good.
That was one of my favorites
and
last year.
And that's a movie that you'd put in the musical category. There's no musicals this year.
No.
And in years where there are no musicals, a single film tends to win both of these.
Yep.
This has happened three times in the last 5 years. Inception, Hugo, and Gravity. All three of those won both. The 2 years that a film didn't win both, Les Miserables and Whiplash. So.
Now, I feel like a couple years ago, you split on Gravity.
I don't remember what I did for
that.
I did both.
Yeah, I did split
on
Gravity.
And I was surprised you split.
And that wound up
and
costing
that is
me.
Why.
I know I went for Les Mis. The year Les Mis won, because like they didn't have music on set. They just had it in their earpiece. And they sang it live.
And it's not a perfect match this year. There were four films nominated in both categories, and two films are nominated in one of the categories.
So. All right, well, let's start with sound editing. Molly, we'll start with you.
What movie that I was shocked. What are the nominees?
Or nominees first.
Oh, here, do you have a list of them? Oh, the worst. So, for sound editing, where is this?
There's
oh, here we go. First, Mad Max, Fury Road. Next nominee, The Martian. Ugh, awful movie. Also, we have The Revenant, Sicario, and Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
You want me to go with this one? I was surprised at how much I liked this movie, so I'm obviously not going for Mad Max because I've made it known that I didn't like that. I've actually seen all the movies that were nominated for this category. Lightsaber noises, you know? Come on. Star Wars.
All right.
Definitely.
So Molly's down for the Star Wars.
Are we doing both?
Lisa?
Oh, okay.
For best sound editing, Kim chose Mad Max. I also chose Mad Max.
Jeez. Like, so what is this? Like,
that's three
you're
for Mad Max.
Really
the three
hurting
of you
my
going on stuff,
Star
and then I'm the dark horse.
Listen, Star Wars could win some stuff. Star Wars is a good dark horse, but
I was shocked how good that movie was.
They
seriously
didn't really do anything new in this one. And they've won in the past for the lightsabers, the blasters.
Have.
Yeah.
And we know how much Lisa loves Star Wars.
30 years ago they won for that. All right.
And now for sound mixing, just to remind everybody, that is when you are taking sounds in simplified. You're mashing them up together,
yeah,
sounds that we already have. Now the nominees are Bridge of Spies. Next nominee, Mad Max, Fury Road, again. The Martian, The Revenant, and Star Wars, Force Awakens. So the only one that you didn't see on editing would be Bridge of Spies.
Why? Why is it nominated? I don't get it.
I don't know.
It's a war movie. War movies
guns
usually
it
do well in that
movie,
category.
But I don't really get.
Sicario had a lot of great gun sound effects.
That's a movie that could have been nominated for Best Picture.
It could have. But anyway, back to the question at hand here on WMFO Medford.
Kim chose for sound mixing Mad Max.
I also chose Mad Max.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I also chose Mad Max.
Lisa.
Am I kicking Molly off my team yet?
Molly?
Is that.
I went with Star Wars again.
Okay. So
you
Star
might, because you and I, for the first time ever, actually, since the three
can
of us
I,
have done this.
Can we vote somebody off the island?
Derek, Lisa, and I are going to be watching the awards together.
Yes.
Now, Derek and I have watched it together for forever, but this is going to, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of swearing going on while
probably
we're watching this.
Pretty vicious. All right. Best visual effects. For the nominees, we have Ex Machina, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, and Star Wars The Force Awakens.
My pick is Star Wars The Force Awakens, which I think is the only technical that film is going to take. They did everything practically as much as they could. I think they get points for that. I think they get points for BB-8. And I think they get
BB-8 was awesome
points for this being the 40th anniversary of ILM.
I feel like I'm going to be the only one that is going to differ on this. I am going with Mad Max Fury Road. This was the only category I could say that I am completely split. And I solely did it on the fact that I did not want to vote for Star Wars. I could not choose. It's probably going to go to Star Wars. Kim chose The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
As did I.
Yeah.
So I am the oddball
Lisa,
out.
Lisa, for once, is the oddball out.
And
okay,
by the way, there is a tight race in this category between those two movies. There are those who believe Mad Max is going to completely sweep technical categories. The only one that Star Wars has a chance of winning is visual effects.
You know what? The way Lisa feels about Star Wars, like didn't like it, I feel that way about Mad Max.
I don't know how you're going to hate Mad Max that much.
I feel that way about Mad Max. I don't know. I don't.
All right. On to best makeup and hairstyling. We only have three nominees this time. First, Mad Max Fury Road. The 100-year-old man who climbed out of the window and disappeared. And The Revenant. Molly, what did you have?
Makeup? I did The Revenant because, you know, they had to do some pretty interesting stuff for that.